the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 166 of the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes and at NFL.com/Sheck. S-H-E-K. Let's dig into it. A dark week, frankly, for the NFL, but it's sunny here in Studio 66 because we are joined not only by my favorite Englishman of all time, save possibly Roger Moore version of James Bond. Hello, handsome Hank. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, but let's move on from me. I'm not important today.
Of course. No, indeed. No, no one thinks, no one's suggesting right. as much. But let's say hello now to the main man seated directly across from us here. He's the superstar running back of the Kansas City Chiefs. And I don't mind saying, because listen, let me just tell you something before I introduce you. Just understand, no jive. That's the only rule here in 66. Okay. No jive. And I'm not going to jive you, and this isn't to try and curry favor with you. You should have been much higher on the top 100 list this year. It's Jamal Charles. What's the poop, fella?
What's up going on? I'm glad to be here in the studio today with y'all.
It's a pleasure, and it's made all the more pleasurable by your fancy getup. You're very sort of summery looking today. What is it? It's like a peach tie and matching peach pants?
Yeah, that's basically what it is. Basically, I love clothes, and I like styling. So I dressed myself. I went to the store and really put this thing together myself.
It's quite sharp.
I don't Similar to me. That's what I did as well today.
Yeah. Fashion maven, handsome Hank. Finally a chance to put your head together with Jamal Charles.
Anytime y'all need me to style y'all, just call me up. I got you.
You beat me to the That's what I need. Look, I need some help here. But you know what? People around the NFL. You know what? Let's talk uniforms.
Okay.
Because coming up on July 1st, next Monday, the launch of, on NFL.com, the uniform bracket. 64 uniforms, the 32 current uniforms, plus my favorite throwback uniform for all the 32 teams. Let's get right into the. Let's start with the hot button issue. What is the best uniform? Let's get some thoughts here.
Let's see the best uniforms. Well, the best uniforms last year had to be the Seahawks.
Seahawks. Please, a buzzer, Black Tie. We're off to a bad start. You can't announce yourself to be a fashion maven and then immediately say that those aren't bad. They're not bad, but they're not great.
So who you say was had the best outfit? Like,
can
best?
I tell you what? I think the Chiefs are pretty nice. I think the Chiefs are underrated.
I like the Chiefs.
We don't have the best uniforms. I don't know. I can't agree.
What about the pants? Do you like when they're red or do you like when they're white with the white jersey?
I like when they're white. All white.
Because that reminds you of Texas.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I knew it.
Bust the horn on that.
Let me say this to you. I think the Niners, I think the Raiders, I think the people in the Bay Area get to look at two of the best uniforms, maybe the two best. I like the Redskins with those gold pants, too.
The Redskins, yeah. I like Baltimore because they wear all black and, people all into all black. You know what I'm saying? When they wear and they purple too. Mm-hmm. So I think the Raiders do like this. The same with the Raiders. They have black and gray. Like you don't see that. They've been doing that traditionally, and they still wear the same uniform.
I like when they don't. I like those teams that generally don't change the uniform around. That's why I like the Chiefs too. They've worn the exact same getup since the first Super Bowl.
Yeah. What you think about Tampa Bay?
Well,
old school uniform.
Old school Tampa.
I feel like we enjoy. I think we. This is one of those things you talk about when people talk about the olden days and how they were better. That's what those creamsicle uniforms are. They're just people pining for something just because it's not around anymore. When they were still wearing them, nobody liked them. Everybody made fun of them. Now all of a sudden, everybody misses them so much.
Same with the old Patriots one. Actually,
those are awesome.
They are awesome, but at the time they moved on from them because people didn't like them so much.
That's true.
Yeah,
I don't think people are going to feel the same way about the new Dolphins ones. I think the new Dolphins ones are great, and I don't think anyone's going to be going. Eventually, they're not going to be going. I wish they were wearing
those.
Did you
see those, Jamal?
No, I haven't seen those.
Yeah, you'll get a look.
You're
going
to
like them.
All right, let's talk top 100 here, Jamal, and let's start with you. I have been saying I've been on the reaction show for the last couple months now, and I have said this time and again. Jamal Charles, the only thing that went wrong for him was he came back from that knee injury in the same season Adrian Peterson had his. Are you a little – I mean, is there any part of you that's kind of like, hey, what about me, everybody? I know he went for 2K, but look, I'm no slouch either.
Nah, man. You know, everything happened for a reason. AP, he came back strong, and he outstood me, you know what I'm saying? He beat me to the point, so – But also, I made history, too. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I broke Jim Brown's record, so I was still proud of myself, what I had accomplished as well. I don't knock AP for nothing. He deserved all the accomplishment he'd been getting, MVP, coming back from knee surgery, just like me. And he came back, you know what I'm saying? I give him real props because he got hurt late in the season.
Yeah, true.
And I got hurt early, and he came back. I was leading the lead in rushing one time, like mm-hmm. 5 weeks. And all of a sudden, I just started seeing my carries going increase, and I just started seeing AP just exploding. Mm-hmm. And I had to just give my props off to that because I wish no knee surgery on nobody. That's the worst thing anybody can go through.
Hmm. Well, what about that? Your injury seems like one of the weirdest, flukiest ones I've ever seen. You stepped, if I'm not mistaken, you stepped on the first down marker, the plastic orange thing that's on the field. What gives with that? Did they outlaw that, by the way, after that? That should be the – I mean, it should never have happened, and now that it happened to you, they should outlaw it, right?
Man, that's what I thought. I mean – highlighted or spray paint somewhere. Yeah. But no, it really hurt me when I found out I really hurt my knee stepping on that thing because it didn't slide.
Mm-hmm.
When I landed on it, it stayed there. And I guess when that's when my leg just gave because I thought it was going to, at least it would have slid, my leg would have slid with it. But it just stayed in the ground, stuck. And ever since that, I always think about that first down marker, and I try to avoid it when I go out of bounds.
Yeah, now you're gonna be the opposite of so many running backs who try to preserve themselves by stepping out of bounds. You're never going to go near the out of bounds markers again, huh?
I try not to go out of bounds, but, I mean, that's my thing. I do not like getting hit. If you got to get down or go out of bounds, you got to do what you got to do.
Hey, Ryan Clark, you know, you're obviously not the biggest running back in the NFL or anything, but I was talking to Ryan Clark of the Steelers, and he was saying that you are a handful. You were the only guy last year who any defense really needed the game plan for in Kansas City, and yet and he said the thing that of course you're fast and everything else, but he said you're a load, that you're willing to go between the tackles. Is that something that you pride yourself on, then?
Oh, yeah.
Being a guy who's not necessarily built like Jim Brown?
Oh yeah, I mean, people misjudge me so much because all they think about is speed. They don't know my abilities. I can go between the holes. They don't know how big. It's not how big the person is, how big your heart is. And my heart in the inside is big than what I really am. And I go out there and I try to play like a big back sometimes, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I'm not a big back, but I go out there and let you know I can be an every down back. If you stand in front of me, I'm going to bring the pain to you. Like, you trying to bring the, I'm going to bring
all right, settle down. Don't give me that look when you say it. I'm not going to try to tackle you or anything.
The NFL game is not played in Studio 66.
All right, stay out of this, right, Steve Smith. Now, listen, I feel like you're jiving me just ever so slightly, Jamal, because you said it's not how big the guy is, it's how big his heart is. If that were the case, I would be in the NFL. But then again, my mother wouldn't let me play football, so I who knows what I would have done. Had I been able to make it there. So let's talk about then. It was a really bizarre season. I want to get back to this top 100. But I want to ask, though, it's funny that so many guys showed up on it, yourself included, of course, in the top 100 and then in the Pro Bowl and everything. For a 2-14 team, it was really I can't imagine we've ever seen anything like that in NFL history. So obviously there's talent, there's pieces, and on both sides of the ball. Romeo Crennel goes out. In comes Andy Reid. What's it like now? What's the difference in vibe around the Chiefs?
I mean, Crennel, he was a great coach. You know what I'm saying? He respected his players and he let us lead. But you know what I'm saying? At the same thing, I'm sorry that had to happen to him leaving. But Andy Reid, he come in with being a head coach for years in the league and with experience, went to the Super Bowl. But you know what I'm saying, Ryan Crennel, he won 6 Super Bowls as well, being a coach. You know what I'm saying? He never reached that Super Bowl being a head coach. But Andy Reid, he's an offensive minded, a master of the offense of this NFL, and he put so much in his offense that he can help us win a lot. You know what I'm saying? All these talk about putting points on the board. Like last year, our offensive coordinator wasn't really talking about putting points on the board. You know what I'm saying? And now this year, Andy come in and he just boosts his offense so up. He hype you up so much. You just be sitting in the meeting room. He gonna be like, "You ain't ready. You ain't ready to play." And everybody like, "What you mean, coach? What you mean? We ready?" So man, he just bring that energy to the team, and especially in the meets. And he crafted his own offense. He made it the way it worked for him years and years. Like, I think it's the system. I really don't think it's the players. I think if you a good player, it's gonna stand out. But I think it's his system. Like, he made Brian Westbrook, he made Sean McCall, he made DeSean Jackson, he made McElroy and Michael Vick, man, and Donovan McNair. I think his system is awesome.
Talking about his system, though, one of the first things he did was bring in Chris Ault, who was Colin Kaepernick's coach at Nevada. Does that mean that some of the pistol is coming to Kansas City?
Oh yeah, I mean, he went and got him, and now we gonna improvise on doing the pistol as well, trying to run the same offense that San Francisco run, because Alex Smith used to run up there, so he used to run the same offense. So I mean, come in and I mean that pistol is just different. Like, we add so much to our offense we never had in the past. Like, man, we put at least about 20 plays every day. It's not the same play, it's a different play.
Right.
So I'm thinking like, dang, I got to get in this playbook every day. And it's different technique, words wrong. Like, oh man, it's this offense is it's crazy. The offense, you gotta really study this offense, but when it works, it could be successful.
Is it sort of like, is it comparable to being in the backfield with Vince Young at Texas kind of vibe? Is that a legitimate sort of comparison? That,
oh, yeah.
Whereas you're challenging college defenders with the option and forcing a defender to choose on the edge, is that basically what it breaks down to being here?
That's what it breaks down with, because Alex Smith, he's fast too. He can run as well. So, you know what I'm saying? Most people know Alex can run. Mm-hmm. They don't want to let him out, because I saw him in practice one day take off. I'm like, whoa. That would remind me of VY, Vince Young. So, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, that's the game that we didn't have last year with Castle. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't fast like Alex Smith. You know what I'm saying? So, we can do the option with Alex Smith. We couldn't do that with Castle. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Alex Smith could pick up 20 yards, you know what I'm saying, before somebody come and try to tackle him. So, I mean, I think it's going to – just watch out. That's all I got to tell you.
Well, yeah, like we say, there are a ton of pieces on both sides of the ball. Let's assume that the defense, I mean, you've got superstar playmakers on defense, and that's kind of what it's about, it seems to me. It's not about necessarily keeping the other team to 10 points a game. It's almost impossible to do that. What you need now are playmakers that are taking the ball away. Eric Berry and all the sack masters and everything else you got there, that side of the ball should be taken care of. I got to think Andy Reid's going to make this offense score a lot of points. Because I'll tell you, I like DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin. I like more. I like John Baldwin, and I think he's a potential star if he gets it together.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Dwayne Bowe. How say you?
Yeah, I say the same thing. I think Jonathan Bowman, I think he will come along. Like, he got a great – he's 6'5", big body, and strong. So he can jump as well. So just put the ball in the air. And Dwayne Bowe, he's great after catching the ball, and he can get up the end zone, and he got great hands.
You win a foot race, though, right? I mean, no, Alex Smith or any of those receivers aren't going to beat you in a race, right?
I don't even know why you asked me that question.
I feel as a journalist, it's my obligation.
Oh, please. It's not even a question.
Please, tell him again.
Oh, please. It's not even
it's
a
just
question.
It's a figure of speech, Black Guy. Okay. So you win that foot race. But, yeah, so Baldwin's on the rise. Bo, the offense looks good. But what about the team? To me, I think the Bengals are really the most complete team in the AFC. But everybody seems like they're picking the Broncos this year. What's the buzz around KC with you guys? I mean, I know obviously in summertime everybody thinks, oh, we can go to the Super Bowl. But legitimately, what stands out to you about getting over the hump when you play those Broncos?
Oh, man, you got to stop Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I think they got Wes Worker now as a slot wide receiver. But I think our defense got much better. We went out there and got Dante Robinson. We got Sean Smith from the Dolphins. Man, put them guys. They shutting down our Robinson. He was in practice, so we know what we had to do to go out there and get the best cornerbacks, because we know we got to play them. We know we got to play Wes Worker and Darius Thomas and
Decker.
Decker, you know what I'm saying? So. Once we got that secured, all we're worrying about is the linemen, all they got to do is get to the quarterback, and Justin and Tom, they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the way our defense set up now with the new defensive coordinator, it's just crazy the way he's coming from side to side and bringing them up the middle. It's going to be exciting playing them guys.
All right, let's talk this top 100 here. Like I say, I feel you should have been at least close to the top 10, if not in it. I would honestly say about 12-ish for you. Adrian Peterson, I guess that's hard to argue with it, given the year he had. He had arguably, like I say, maybe you could make a case, the greatest season for a running back in NFL history in a pass-first era, so that's good.
And Peyton, coming off that injury.
Yes. Yeah. Well, but I feel like I'm not saying it. Jamaal Charles came back from a knee injury, too, and people don't say boo about it on a lousy team. That's hard to do on a crummy team.
But I accept that with number one with a running back, but Peyton Manning coming back from an injury – is that why he's number two?
I guess so, but of course Aaron Rodgers is better than Peyton Manning, right?
Nah, not really, because I give Peyton Manning, he sat out a whole year as well and almost made it to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So what you say about that?
I say that he did what he does every year when it's January. He threw the game away. Threw a chance at a Super Bowl away. That's what I say to you, Jamaal Charles.
Not really. His defense threw it away.
A little bit. Well, it went to overtime, and he's the one who threw the interception.
But, I mean, the ball got behind the free safety. So
what are you defending? This is your arch rival. What are you defending?
I'm just trying to fix the situation that you understand.
What about so you go then Calvin Johnson 3 to me. That's another guy who maybe had the best season in the history of his position. Then Tom Brady, then J.J. Watt, and then finally Aaron Rodgers. What gives? Why don't the peers appreciate Aaron Rodgers a little bit more?
Man, I don't know. He had an outstanding season, too. He led his team to the playoff, but all these guys in front of him went to the playoffs as well.
Mm.
I mean, some of them great players, but Aaron Rodgers, he's standing out as well. But I think he should at least replace Tom Brady.
What about a guy you legitimately line up against, Von Miller? Should he be higher than 9?
Oh, yeah, Von should at least be number 7 or 6 on here. And I feel like Alvin Smith should be 6 or at least about 4.
Oh, really? Higher up?
Yeah.
Oh, really? So Alden Smith better than Von Miller and should be higher on the list in general.
Man, that's my list.
Yeah.
I put Adrian Peterson first, Peyton Manning second. Also,
hit that buzzer again, because that's wrong, Black Tie.
No, that's not like that. Don't hit that buzzer.
Black Tie, have some dignity.
I agree.
Jamaal Charles is going to walk out the door, and you're never going to see him again, but you're going to have to deal with me again.
Show me some love. Give me some love.
Well, what about this, Jamaal Charles? Let's talk. You mentioned VY, and I want to ask about him because he is, to me, an enigma. Why don't teams, when so many teams are desperate to find a good quarterback, especially one with the spread option or pistol or whatever you want to call it, with this now coming on in the league, why wouldn't a team go out and get Vince Young to take a shot on this guy?
I have no idea. I feel like VY still have the passion for the game, the love of the game, been around this all season.
He's been a winner in the NFL.
He's been a winner, and he always been a winner through his whole career.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So he can bring leadership. He's a great player. You know what I'm saying? Just all you got to do is just put plays that around him. He can make players. I mean, put players – the plays that he can make, he can go out there and do them. Just in the right system, he can go out there and be the best player he can be.
Did you say to Andy Reid, hey, take a look at my old college chum?
Man, VY told me that, but at the end of the day, I'm not a GM or the head coach. I can't make the decision.
Uh-huh.
I only can go out there and ask coach, man, hey, would you look at my friend?
Well, I'm looking at where you could have, but yeah, no. But no, listen. The here's what we're gonna do. Jamaal Charles and I are going to leave here in a little while, and we're gonna jump into the sports car, and we're gonna take a spin around the streets of Los Angeles.
Okay.
And I'm gonna get to know the real Jamaal Charles, and I'm gonna show him my LA. How about that? It's gonna be a good time. This is just the tip of the iceberg for a grand day together, Jamaal Charles.
Right.
I think
right.
We're gonna get. Oh, it's gonna be great. Last thing in here though, best college football uniform.
I had to say University of Texas.
You know what?
All white.
It's 1 or 1A. Oh, you like the all white. I like that burnt orange jersey, too. No, but I like the all white on the road. It's pretty nifty.
All white is crazy.
The only?
Oregon, I had to fit Oregon. Been having
Which one?
We were almost we almost came to an agreement, and then you had to throw Oregon. Alabama with the numbers on the side of the hat. That's pretty good. No, yes, it is. I don't know about this. I don't know where I might leave you off on the streets of L.A. if this is the behavior that I'm going to receive.
I'm going to put you out. You ain't going to put me out.
Oh, this is going to be fun. See, that's what they like. In TV and movies, they like drama and conflict.
Right.
So I guess we'll have that ready to go.
You've got that wrapped up.
All right. Jamal Charles, what a pleasure to see you. Go off into the NFL night, and we'll look forward to catching up with you in the car in just a few minutes. Thanks so much, man.
Appreciate it. Can't wait.
There he is. Jamal Charles, a delightful fella.
What
even
fun.
Though, I guess, here's the thing. He talks about himself as a fashionable fella, and he is fashionable with what the clothes he puts on his own back. But then he comes out with that opinion right out of the gate. Seattle? Come on.
Oregon?
I mean, Oregon, I can kind of see if you're a college kid, the idea of wearing a different uniform every week. But Seattle.
But what if you really like one of those and then you never see it again?
That would be a bummer, too.
Like, I like the one we wore in week two, but week six, I don't even know where that is anymore.
All right. So let's quickly say what this top 10 list is. Hope you've got our top the last 10 names on this top 100 list for 2013. Again, as voted on by the players. Adrian Peterson wins the top spot. No surprise to me. I've been saying for some time. I think players appreciate nothing more than a guy who's able to come back from that.
I get it.
Peyton Manning, too, so be it. Calvin Johnson should be no lower than three. I think you could make a strong case that he belongs at two or even one. Based on, you know, listen, as Adam Rank said, the, you know, Calvin Johnson maybe did have the single greatest season at his position.
No
and
doubt.
The difference between himself and the second best is maybe the greatest.
I'm all in on that.
Aaron Rodgers is way too low.
He's too low. J.J. Watt had a great season as a defender and made some real impact plays.
But Von Miller, out of him, Alden Smith, and J.J. Watt, I feel like is the guy who's the most surefire Hall of Famer.
Yes.
2 years in. I mean, how can we gauge? But
and for more Top 100 reaction, stick around because the ATL Debate Club is coming up.
Why are you tuning the show out?
What just happened?
He has to go.
I'll carry on by myself.
Guess what? Jamal Charles is going off. He's going to do whatever. Guess what I'm doing? I'm jumping in for another episode of the Sports Car right now with guess who? My dear friend from the Top 100 show, Warren Sapp.
Adrian Peterson.
Future Hall of Famer. No! Future Hall of soon to be. I mean, he is a Hall of Famer. He just hasn't gotten the gold jacket yet.
Sort
of
like Warren Sapp and you.
Yes, we're going to hit the streets right now. Is that what we're doing, Black Tie? I got to go. All right. So I got to go. Black Tie's making me dance, so it's time to boogie. Here comes everybody. Get ready, Flames. It's your heroes. From around the league, the Debate Club. Take it away, boys.
Hand Zeus and Mr. Fancy Pants. The Flames need NFL news, and here's their chance. It's ATL around the league. Light a flame, boys. Pigskin's hot tonight. Burn, baby, burn.
Thanks, Dave. Welcome back to another edition of the ATL Debate Club. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined in the studio by Mark Sessler and Greg Rosenthal. Hey, fellas.
Good to be back with you.
Feels like the whole gang, we're here.
Finally.
I'm here for good. You're here. You're back. And then Dan's going on one of his 15 vacations next week.
I'm going Ghost Protocol next week. I will not be on the show next week, so don't try to track me down.
Well, we do have, sadly, we have Wes parked at a computer alone monitoring news right now.
Well, there's a reason, though. I mean, there's some big stuff going on right now. This is probably, this Aaron Hernandez situation, to me, is, you know, it's one of the biggest NFL stories in a long time. I mean, just in terms of not only just from an NFL standpoint, this is the story that your mom knows about, that your aunt knows about. This is big stuff which is going on, and it's kind of hard to believe that it's blown up to and gotten this big.
Well, it's the type of story, and you could just tell by the way the Patriots reacted to it when they released Aaron Hernandez. Mark was the one in our offices here in Culver City, California, at 5 in the morning, 5:50, when the news first came down. So he was working on that first news story. And for the Patriots to quickly release him was interesting and surprising. But what took me, after reading 10 years of statements from teams, was the statement that the Patriots had. Instead of saying anything about Hernandez, it was a statement of support to the victims. It was a statement of support and hope for the police, and it wasn't about Aaron Hernandez. And that, to me, I mean, it wasn't really a football type of statement, and this really isn't a football type of story. It's gone beyond football.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. At the end of the day, and we had waves of new information as we followed the piece from kind of its early moments where the police showed up and took Hernandez away through the arraignment and everything else. And I got home, and I have two small children at home. We have a babysitter. We hire someone to watch my kids.
Yes.
Because that's a smart thing to do. But I talked to her, and I said, you know, oh, well, it was a busy day today. There was actually, you know, an issue with the player. He got arrested. She's like, I know all about it. And she does not follow football one lick, but it had got on her radar early. And it's like you go log on to CNN, and it was like their number one story. Yeah. So it wasn't a football story as much as it's like very much it became part of our society yesterday.
I would almost say that, you know, given how good a player Hernandez is and, you know, who he plays for and the fact that he's prime in the middle of his career, this is almost a unique story. I mean, it's unprecedented in the league that we're dealing with someone like this being involved with something like this in the middle of his career. So it's been amazing to watch it unfold.
Well, the details that keep coming out in the prosecutor's case that they have, you know, unveiled throughout these hearings, and then we had the bail hearing on Thursday. I mean, they're just it's hard to believe, sort of, and I'm just thinking of the swiftness of how this all happened, where we were. However we thought about Aaron Hernandez a couple weeks ago, he was taken from his house, surprised, in handcuffs, Wednesday morning. Hours later, the Patriots release him. Hours after that, he's charged with murder and five other counts, and then they go through a laundry list of reasons why he's charged with murder. We're not going to analyze it legally, obviously. We're not in position to do that. But the judge in his bail hearing case, you know, today, which is Thursday, said that the prosecution has a very, very strong case, and that's part of the reason why they were denying bail and that Aaron Hernandez will stay in jail. And it's just we roll with this because it's our job. I've been writing the news stories, and I feel like, you know, I'm putting on this little news crime reporter hat for a couple of days, not usually what we do. We roll with it because it's our job, but if you just take a step back, it's sort of unbelievable that all this has happened.
From one angle, you know, looking at what we are dealing with and what we could have been dealing with, I think New England's decision to very swiftly part ways with Hernandez, again, less of a football move, but it cleans this entire narrative up a bit, because we don't have to wonder, are they going to entertain, you know, his career down the road? I thought it was a very decisive operation on their part, and it's hard not to respect them deeply for the way they handled the situation, I thought.
Ian reported they made it last week, which I thought was one of the most interesting things to come out yesterday, that essentially the top people at the organization, we know who that is, decided last week, you know, they're going to release him when the time comes. I think they probably expected the arrest, and, you know, when it came, that was it.
I was struck in general by Wednesday, the drama, the high level of drama, even for a case of this type. I mean, they did not have him turn himself in. You know, they went to his house, and of course cameras were there to catch it all. He opens the door without a shirt on and is clearly surprised. And then the Patriots, there's no delay. They release him, and then you have that as a major dramatic aspect of it from the NFL standpoint. And then you get into the arraignment procedure, and the prosecutor, you think it's going to be something that's laid out, you know, in a matter of how the court does things, maybe slowly, and you'll find out things as it goes along. Instead, you get a lot of the case laid out at this arraignment, and everyone's listening, and Twitter's blowing up. It was just the whole day. It was kind of surreal, and we got so much information in one day. It was one of the craziest days of the offseason I can remember since I started working here.
I don't think, and we haven't really sifted through all that information. So much came out on Wednesday and Thursday, and you're right. It's a moment I think we'll all remember where you were covering. It's just one of those moments, and you're kind of, while you're in the middle of it, you're even aware of that. And I mean, part of the reason because of that was because of a Massachusetts state law, courtroom allows cameras, period. So that added a unique element that we were watching it unfold on NFL Network as it was happening. Andrew Siciliano was doing a great job, you know, kind of manning the ship there. And, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen when they stepped into that courtroom. We didn't know what the charges were going to be. We didn't know it was going to be a murder charge. So, you know, we talk about this. This is reality television, and it's not a fun thing to cover or fun to watch. But this, I mean, I think that's why it was so captivating, for lack of a better word.
I mean, and so look at the Patriots, because, you know, we talk about they made this swift move, but the fallout in terms of what they do from a roster perspective and how they handle this on a team that, frankly, the story even before Hernandez was they're short on pass catchers, or at least proven ones. What's the next move for the Patriots?
I think it just puts so much onto Tom Brady's back. Brian Billick made the point on NFL Network that if he does something this season, it'll be one of the greatest feats he's done. It reminds me a lot of 2005, 2006, when Rashay Caldwell, Jabbar Gaffney were their pass catchers. They can find ways to win games without having an explosive passing attack necessarily, and I think that's how it's going to have to be. They're going to have to rely on the running game, the defense.
And I think a difference, though, between what's happening now and what was going on in the middle of the 2000s is that, you know, the Patriots had carefully cultivated the roster, and they built it that way, and they knew what how to get the most out of what they had. Here they're dealing with these unknown, you know, quantities that we didn't know that Gronk was going to have all these surgeries. We didn't know that Hernandez was all of a sudden going to drop off the radar for the team.
I don't know that you ever carefully cultivate Rashay Caldwell as your number one receiver. That was a problem.
But my point being is that now we're almost into July, and there's no way, even a team that has their front office and has a legend of the coach, they're going to be scrambling a little bit to try to figure this out. And I think what Billick said was that, you know, Brady should be going straight into Canton after the season if they lead the league in offense again. But, you know, I think it's a little premature. A lot of people are saying this is the end for the Patriots, and I think it could be the end, you know, for this season anyway, of them maybe being a Super Bowl contender. But people who think they're going to be, you know, a 6-10 team suddenly are really underestimating Tom Brady, who's still at the peak of his powers, in my opinion, and then also Bill Belichick together. And there's some, you know, talent on that team. They could run the ball still. You know, I still think this is a 9-11 win team.
Well, and I think let's remember, this is not a team that has only won with two tight end sets dating back 10 years. The Gronkowski Hernandez thing is three seasons. It's only relatively new. And Belichick, even on a week to week basis, doesn't throw out the same looks, the same strategy. Even last season, when Hernandez was out, what were they, 5-1 when he was out with his injury?
And Gronkowski missed a lot of time as well. This is a team that's built to adjust. So I would never, until proven otherwise, I assume, and I know I'm a homer, but I would assume they're absolutely a Super Bowl contender, and they just have to spend these next months figuring out, okay, how do we attack teams? You know, we have this running game that's pretty deep. We have Julian Edelman, who I think might be their number two receiver behind Danny Amendola. Who else can we find to step up? Can these guys stay healthy? And it all goes back to McDaniels and Tom Brady.
And they also get that underdog vibe to them now, which they haven't had in many years. A lot of people are going to be counting them out. And that, I think that always works positively for a team. And the Patriots haven't been able to stand on that ground, I guess, maybe since Brady blew out his knee. And, you know, they performed well that year, too.
Yeah, and I wouldn't put it past Belichick and that front office to swing a trade, because you don't have a lot of time with Brady left. You know, you never know how long Belichick's going to stick around. I still think it will be for quite a while. But they, you know, he loves his veteran players, and I could see them going out and getting someone that we are all 2 weeks from now saying, wait a minute, we've counted this team out far too soon.
And they're a different team in terms of acquiring players since Scott Pioli left. Bill Belichick, you know, he's running the show, and he probably was before, but it's a little different now. They're not afraid to roll the dice. I agree with that. And they traditionally, again, sounding like a homer, do better when they're a little underestimated. I think that was a great point. 2011, the year after the Ravens really waxed them in the playoffs, was probably the lowest expectations they had, because they had a very young team. We didn't know about Gronkowski and Hernandez yet, and they ended up having a great season. In general, they've tended to have good years. I remember after Spygate, people thought that would be a problem, and that worked out fine, you know, until the very end. So they have a better defense, I think, now than any point since 2007. So I think there are pieces in place, and you have a great quarterback that, of course, you would expect them to be contenders.
And also, look at the AFC East. I know Greg right now is wearing a Ryan Tannehill jersey underneath his work shirt, but, you know, they have a lot of new pieces. You never know how that's going to work out. The Jets and Bills are obviously in, you know, various states of a rebuild. I don't see a team that's ready to take advantage of the Patriots coming back to the pack. So I think that has to be factored in as well when you talk about how do the Patriots get back to the playoffs.
Do you think someone challenges them in the AFCs?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Tannehill because I have to look at the quarterback situations on each of these teams. And the only if you don't have a steady quarterback situation in the NFL in general, it's really hard in June to predict success for instance, the Bills with Kevin Cobb and EJ Manuel. It's like I like what's going on with Manuel potentially, but he's a complete unknown. And you go, the New York Jets are an absolute train wreck under center. And then it's like, well, sorry, but it's like there's a lot of unproven stuff going on there.
Got
maybe,
the best answer, though.
Well, Miami has had this colossal offseason, which something about it scares me. But if everything goes right, in theory, Miami could have that kind of 9-7, 10-6 season while the Patriots have a down year. Maybe that's how they sneak in. But again, I'm with Greg. I'm not going to predict doom for New England's operation until I see it.
That was my prediction as well. Why did you only give Greg credit for that prediction?
Dan also chimed in with that.
I made the point initially.
It's definitely lot of kissing up to the boss, I feel like, coming here. Throwing my weight around. I think with the Patriots and the AFCs, one underrated factor in their run is this has been one of the worst divisions in football on balance for a while. There's been good runs. The Jets were a very good team for a few years. But I still think it's one of the worst. You go up and down the list, and I can't really think other than the AFC West of a division that's definitely worse than this division.
Do you see the Jets and Bills just completely looking at 5-11 type seasons?
Do I think that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
I think the Jets and Bills are both 5-6 win teams, and it could be worse.
Dan and I had a conversation about the Jets the other day, and he was saying, is it crazy to say the Jets' ceiling is 9-7 or something like that? And I said, yes. Would it really – have we seen more surprising teams go 10-6 on a regular basis than the Jets? I think we have. It happens every year. I think they do have one thing going for them, which is the potential – for a very good defense. And if you have one thing and they have a very good defensive coach, then that gives you a chance to stay in every game and just get a few bounces your way and go 10-6. I really don't think there's a big difference between 10-6 and 6-10.
The Jets were a 9-win team last year. If they got even mediocre quarterback play, they just happened to get dreadful quarterback play.
That's a big lost 10 games.
Yeah. So that's why I'm not getting excited about it. But it's a wide open division now. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
The Jets would be fine if they didn't have the worst quarterback position in the NFL. Other than that.
That's one way to put it.
They wouldn't stand out the way they do if they didn't have such an issue with Sanchez.
And I've said it before, 3 years ago, Jets fans were pinching themselves thinking we finally found the franchise quarterback. And this is where we are now.
Watching Vines and what?
Watching Vines.
You guys are a sad
bunch.
No
pants. Just a horrible situation. What else do you guys want to talk about today? I mean, it's pretty heavy. NFL week, but the top 100 list, that's wrapping up. Do you want to talk about that?
Are we obligated to talk about that?
I think we should.
We're under contract for it.
You know, we're taping this on the day it is coming out. It is fresh news, and we've been writing posts about it all the time, so why not talk about it?
Let's.
If our listeners, you know, has not seen the final two episodes, which unveiled the top 10 list, number one on the list is Adrian Peterson. Not going to get a lot of arguments there, I don't think, from many people.
No.
After that, it's Peyton Manning, Calvin Johnson, Tom Brady, J.J. Watt is number 5, Aaron Rodgers number 6, Aldon Smith, Arian Foster, Von Miller, and number 10 is Patrick Willis. I'll throw it out to the room.
Well, I think the one that obviously it stands out is Aaron Rodgers falling down to number 6. I think a lot of people would argue that he could be number one, and no way, like with Adrian Peterson, you wouldn't have a lot of people shrugging their shoulders at that. He's totally worthy, but then you've got a 36-year-old Peyton Manning dialed at number 2. What is it? Just a popularity contest? This entire operation?
And this is you make a point that Peyton Manning, I think you were getting at a point that he's number 2 because it's a popularity contest. He's number 2 because he had an MVP season, and I've on balance, I thought the list was somewhat of a mess. In the post that we have up on the Around the League blog, you know, you have to talk about how Jimmy Graham's not on the list. You know, you have to, and you know, I also
Rondé Barber is number 55.
Rondé Barber's involved, right. And you know, there's some
Reed is number 18. Yes. There's a lot of problems.
Some checks and balances need to be put into place to get this thing right going forward. But Manning, I was proud of the players for putting Manning where he deserved at number two.
Wow.
When you know, we see all this ridiculous stuff about Manning being an overrated player, and you know, he throws one bad pick in overtime, and a lot of lazy people try to use that as a reason to wipe away everything he achieved last season.
Just to note, that's not where I was coming from with that. Am I a lazy individual?
Mark's a lazy analyst.
I didn't think that's what you were doing, but I've seen a lot of that out there.
A little lazy post concussion, I would say. For Mark.
It's not a Manning thing. I just think that I think there will be a reaction to Aaron Rodgers at number six, because I think going in, outside of Adrian Peterson, he would have been most people's guess for one or two.
We asked our readers how they would rank Manning, Brady, and Rodgers, and most did have the order as Rodgers, Manning, Brady. But it wasn't uniform. You had some Brady supporters, some Manning. It's kind of about what's this list measuring. If it's based on last season, you can make that argument. If you're basing it on what quarterback am I taking for 2013, what player's the most talented in the league, how are you not taking Aaron Rodgers over Peyton Manning? It's not a career that we're evaluating. You're taking a guy this year. I think 32 GMs take Aaron Rodgers. I really don't
think. And I think that's the thing. It's more of a career retrospective. In many cases, Ed Reed at number 18 is a shining example. The guy could be 80 spots lower, and I'd be all right with that.
There are weird factors. There's a lot of Super Bowl inflation. The Ravens, I mean, the 40, Alden Smith and Patrick Willis, both in the top 10, I think you could argue about. So there, that happens with
well,
the Super
one,
Bowl.
Well, one, Jacoby
teams.
Jones, two spots higher than Percy Harvin. And, by the way, Percy Harvin down at, like, number 90. And it's like he you know, he fell off because of an injury last season, but it's almost like the players are no different than the average guy watching football. It's like, what have you done for me lately? And it's a popularity contest. Percy Harvin should be up there in what? I could be fine with him being number 25. He was an MVP type candidate last season.
He's also like a inoperable high level cancer. And I, you know, I kind of find that as a reason to keep him lower on the list, and he hasn't stayed healthy. People are in love with Percy Harvin. He has a skill set that's almost unmatched in the league. But I want to see him do it for 16 games. I want to see him not throw people under the bus and not scream at people on the sidelines. You know, just be a good human
being. So you're
being.
One of the people that supported Jacoby Jones.
He liked where Bernard Pollard was right there in the 80s. I mean, gotta give Pollard his due.
The entire Ravens roster is on this list, I think.
Dennis Pitta somehow made it, not Jimmy Graham. I feel like you backed into this conversation a little apologetically, Dan. Like, but this is good stuff, the top 100 list. I mean, I think next year what we need to do is find out how this list is done, because I think they just take it at the Super Bowl or something from the teams that are there and maybe come up with our own alternative list, because we're doing a lot of criticizing and, you know, see if we can do better.
I think we could.
Because we don't have enough lists.
No.
On Around the League.
Around the League, short on rankings. Too much just analysis, news, straight-laced stuff.
So, guys, I'm going away next week. I'm going to the Jersey Shore.
Finally.
Like I said, Ghost Protocol, I will not be reached, but I will be listening next week to see how you guys fare. I'm not incredibly hopeful, but I'm pulling for you guys.
Doesn't the Jersey Shore sound like a vacation that, like, Don Draper would have taken in the early 50s?
He always goes to California. You know that.
And next week is July 4th, of course. A lot of people taking off. Most of the video department, the producers, they're all gone. The building's gone. ATL is working. One person got to take it off because he actually submitted his vacation request, I think, last November or something like that. Dan is the champion at putting in the vacation request first. It was like July 2nd to 8th, and that was it. It's over. Now no one else, you know, no, Mark and his kids can't enjoy July 4th together.
No, naturally.
Get that in.
You gotta play the game right.
Now, you know, you cannot keep this guy in the building. No, as long as Dan is satisfied on typical human holidays,
I feel
good.
Great about this. I feel comfortable with how things shook out this year. But I've already been – I was told at the time of the request that I would not have this time of year off next year, and I can live with that.
Yeah, that was my response because I was a little salty at the time, and I was like, all right, you get it off, but you don't get it off next year.
Well, if we're doing a fair rotation,
right,
not for another half a decade, do you have July 4th?
Yeah, it's going to be like the Olympics. You know, Mom and Dad, I'll see you on Independence Day in 2017.
I'm getting bored of talking with both of you.
Let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
All right. Until next week. Thanks for listening.